welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we're, well, probably on the beach in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, as we close in on the end of the season and hopes of another European adventure have been gone, we can go into the last two games, as we're recording, with no pressure other than trying to secure another top 10 finish. A decent performance in Newcastle last week added another point to the total, but there could be a little extra spice this week with a visit of wannabe club stealers Chelsea and the ongoing basket case that is Manchester United. So then, what else do we know? Well, Pascal Grace picked up the Fans and Players Player of the Year award, with Jack Hinshelwood picking up the Young Player of the Year. And one player who isn't young is Adam Lallana, who has announced that he will be leaving the club at the end of the season after 4 years here. Two players that will be here next season, however, are James Milner and Danny Welbeck, who have extended their Albion stays by 1 and 2 years, respectively. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back a journalist, an author, a musician, a Nick Trepanic. And we also welcome back our chief scout in the shape of Tom Hylands. Welcome back, boys. How are we?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, just about recovered from Newcastle and the joys of the northeast. But yeah, it's all good. Feel a bit more positive.
Yeah, did you have to wear less clothes than usual, Tom?
Well, just to fit in with the locals. I was surprised, actually. They all seem pretty well-dressed.
Which part of the journey is worse, actually? The bit from Brighton to Newcastle or the bit from the gate to the to your seat?
They both take the same time.
Right. Yeah, I think they're probably one's the same distance sort of horizontally and one's the same distance vertically. Nick, how are you, mate?
Yeah, okay, thanks. Yes, looking forward to these next two games and keen to see what we can do.
It's it's indicative of how far we've come, or like to think maybe the mighty have fallen, but it's how far we've come that here we are finishing off the season, playing against Chelsea and Manchester United, and frankly salivating over a potential 6 points, or four at the very least, where once upon a time, if we rewind half a decade, we were saying, well, that's a tough way to close the season. And yet, I think just about every single Brighton fan fancies us for those games, especially after the Newcastle game.
Don't fancy us for Chelsea at all. Chelsea are running into really impressive form. Reece James coming back. I think they're looking to finish the season the way we are. I think tomorrow's going to be a really difficult game. Manchester United, on the other hand, frankly, if we can't beat that shower, I think, yeah, I'll be very disappointed, especially with them being the week before the FA Cup final.
The other thing, Nick, is as well, I'm having watched the last couple of Chelsea games, it appears that Moyes has remembered how to play football again.
Yes, unfortunately, and returning to familiar surroundings will only help that. And, of course, there's the great enigma, there's Marco Correa as well, playing in all sorts of strange positions. Moyes is a great player, a class player, one of the best players ever to play for the Albion. And unfortunately, he was always bound to remember that at some point. Unfortunately, it just come a little bit too early for us. But then, you know, who knows? I'm hoping that that our players will rise to the challenge of preventing him having any impact on the game.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I mean, the last couple of games for the Albion, it's like we've almost remembered how to play football again. It's like it started with the Villa. The patterns of play seem to be returning and the confidence seems to be returning. And again at Newcastle, actually with some better finishing and perhaps a better final ball, we would have actually been home in the hose before they had a chance to equalise.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it feels like walking out of Bournemouth away a couple of weeks ago. Everyone was of the view, you know, everyone's given up. The fans have given up on the season. The players have given up. The manager's given up on the season. And it's almost as though that week in between Bournemouth and Villa, they've kind of got together and gone, look, we just need to get over the fact we were knocked out of Europe. Got to get over the fact things haven't been going our way and just go out, enjoy ourselves again and prove a point to ourselves, if anything, that we can compete. And just, there seems to be so much more drive, desire, creativity over the past couple of weeks. And I think Newcastle, I think we were unfortunate to only be one goal ahead when they equalised. I think we created some really good chances and looked really incisive at times.
Well,
Well,
or in this case, on C-Series. No, that didn't work.
no, it doesn't work.
Well, you see, you could say unfortunate, but you could just say poor finishing as well, because I
Oh,
think
for
we should have
sure.
been. Yeah, I think that part, some of that was an accident of the fixture list, wasn't it? I mean, we'd played Manchester City and Arsenal in home games, and that had rather interrupted our good home record. And then we lucked out by getting a very, very tired-looking Aston Villa, who were coming off a morale sapping home defeat in Europe. So, but we did the job. Very convincing performance. Beat what was in front of us, and carried that on into Newcastle. So, take advantage of those gifts from the football gods when they arrive.
One thing I did also notice as an extra thing, and whisper it up maybe, is that actually I thought we defended a bit better as a unit. I mean, don't get me wrong, the game itself for a neutral up at St James's was a really good game. There's chances and it could have finished six all. But you also couldn't help but feeling, and Anthony Gordon was on fire on that game. He was superb, but you couldn't help feeling that collectively they were a bit more solid and a little bit more robust. And the one time where we let a Newcastle player free in the box, he scored. A couple of other times they might have shanked it. And like I say, for everything that you could say about Newcastle's finishing, you could say about ours and vice versa. I mean, that really was a game of whatever we did, they did. Whatever they did, we did.
Yeah, I think Lamptey's been unfairly criticised for his part in that Newcastle equaliser. To me, it was Buonanotte not tracking his man down that side. But I think the born again Adam Webster has been a big feature of the last two games. No, he was tremendous against Aston Villa, and he struggled against some forwards in the past. And I know, having spoken to him afterwards in the mix zone, that the 6-1 up there was a bit of a personal nightmare for him. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. One of the goals went in, just off a deflection off him. Nothing he could have done about it, but he doesn't have great memories of that. I think he wanted to bury those, as a lot of the team did.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of those with Webster this season as well, hasn't there? With the game against West Ham at home, where he was culpable for one or two of the goals. But
All three.
we've always known that he's a class player, and I know that the management really, really rate him, and he's had to bide his time with the former Van Hecke, and he's had his problems with injury as well, and obviously Van Hecke's now looks like he's out for the season, so he's had to take he's grasped the nettle, as it were, Tom.
Can I just ask a question here? Apart from the two goalkeepers, is there anyone who hasn't suffered an injury at some point? I mean, there's no ever presence this year, is there?
I don't think so. I can't think of any. They've always, if there is, I'm sure they've fallen victim of the rotation system.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
A
thinking probably
Dingra.
also.
Has Dingra been injured? No, possibly,
Well,
because
he
he went
was.
he went to the AFCON, but
Just before AFCON, he had a slight knock,
Oh,
I think.
yeah,
good
yes, he
Yeah.
did.
The age-old slight knock.
I haven't looked up the figures, but I'd imagine that it's Dunk and Gross again, who have probably led the way in terms of the number of appearances. Apart from that, I mean, and it depends. I mean, there's been a couple of suspensions, obviously. Billy Gilmore got suspended, but then he got injured. Mahmoud Dahoud got suspended and then buggered off anyway. We've had another red card this. Oh, yeah, Lewis Dunk mouthing off at Nottingham Forest, wasn't there? So I think with injuries and suspensions, I think that actually probably, given how injuries were going, suspensions were probably almost criminal in comparison. Because what it with suspensions, you have a certain amount of sway over that. Injuries less so. So for Lewis to do what he did at Forest was utterly mad.
It was utterly mad, but then it's also utterly frustrating. I mean, it was probably the correct decision to the letter of the law, but he still remains the only one. This, particularly in well, particularly this season. How many more players from across the rest of the teams in this division and the others have done exactly the same thing? Haven't suffered the same fate.
Yeah, just unlucky that it just happened to be when the referees had got it in their minds they were going to crack down, and unfortunately he was the one they cracked down on. Then, like all these referee crackdowns, they seem to be completely forgotten about the next week.
Yeah, I was about to say it's a crackdown that week, wasn't it? And it was only him. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's don't get me wrong. I'd actually prefer to see it. And if that means that players are actually going to hold their tongue or actually not surround the referee, I mean, there are certain teams. I think possibly the Albion do it to a certain extent as well. But there are teams who, you know, when it's a clear penalty or a clear foul or something's happened, that they automatically go around to the ref and say, "Surely not. How could it be?" Blah blah blah. And you think, what are you trying to achieve apart from thinking that you're going to change the referee's mind when something is so obvious? I mean, look at the way that the Sheffield United players initially surrounded the referee when Mason Holgate tried to take Kari Matoma's leg off.
Yeah, Tom?
I mean, it's going to be really interesting in the Euros because UEFA's just issued their directive that only the captains can approach the referee and talk to the referee, and that anyone else surrounding the referee will be seen as dissent and yellow carded. So it'll be interesting to see, one, if they follow through with that and follow through with it through the whole tournament, and two, what impact that actually has. I mean, I personally would like to see that kind of ruling come into the Premier League, because I think it's ridiculous. I mean, you had it at Newcastle again as well with the dives. Players straight away surrounding the referee, even though it goes to VAR, even though it gets checked. And you know, to be fair, we're bad at that sometimes as well.
Well, we had two diving yellow cards in that game, both correctly called. And in that sense, I mean, you could actually nitpick about every single argument, but I actually thought the referee had a decent game.
Who was the second one? I know the Enciso one. Who was the second?
One of their players?
Right. I thought you said Rehad.
But this is the problem is that this football is sort of muscle memory, isn't it? They've been brought up, you know, to play in a certain way, and they, you know, just the surrounding of referees is just something ingrained in them, and it just takes a long time to unlearn those things. I mean, for example, how long has it taken Buonanotte? God, people are going to think I've got a down on him, but to learn that referees are not going to give a free kick automatically when you fall face down onto the turf. He's been here, 2 years now? And yet he still goes down and stays down expecting free kicks when there's absolutely no chance. And so just to expect players who've been brought up, you know, in a diving culture, shall we say, are just going to do it because it's kind of almost been bred into them, and it's going to take a long time to get out. Yeah, you know, when they started to change the offside laws, some teams reacted immediately, and I think it was a Sam Allardyce Bolton team used to position players on the goal line for free kicks and everything to try and take advantage of it, when other teams hadn't woken up to the fact that anything had changed at all.
Yeah. I was just going to make a very quick slight, really, where you said about Buonanotte lying face down on the floor. I think the award for the longest time spent face down on the floor has to go to Anthony Gordon this season after his penalty shout, because he stayed down an awful long time rather than going back and helping his team defend. And it's crazy, isn't it, that players would rather do that than actually try and help out.
Well, there was a case this weekend, wasn't there, of a player trying to pull one of his own teammates up because they were trying it on in the penalty area, and they're obviously not going to get a free kick. I can't remember what game that was.
Didn't we see this again in Europe as well, where I think it was a Roma player, they went down and stayed down to make sure that they'd seen that there was an incident, and VAR obviously did check it, and they took a long time to check it.
If it means that VAR are going to go and check it, then at the very least, if they think there's something in it, they'll actually then give a message to the referee while the ball's in play, delay. So you'll have someone looking at that. But to be honest, I can't see how it does affect the assistant referee, you know, the VAR's sort of thinking. If they see something, you know, there's times when, you know, obviously depend on the nature of the club badge, but they'll see something in the area, you know, especially at the corner or a free kick or something like that, where someone's pulled. Unless, of course, they play for Spurs, in which case you've got no chance.
Okay.
But they'll pick something out. So to stay on the ground and not help your teammates out is just, well, it's pathetic petulance, and I think it actually deserves a yellow card in its own right just for being an absolute knob.
Okay, well, let's get into that then. Coming, we did see the best and the worst from Enciso in this game, and actually, it was like I mean, apart from the rule in this game that there had to be a Paraguayan on the pitch at all times, because as soon as Onciso went off, Almiron came off, and they both got booked. It's like, you know, it's almost as if they're auditioning for the Paraguayan Olympic team, which is coming up. But I mean, we also saw the best of Onciso in this game, and he was kind of he was playing a lot more central to me. And there was, I mean, there was this that
He
one
was all
instance, there
over
was that
the show. That's the
slide ball
point.
pass he put into Danny Welbeck, which is just absolutely glorious.
Well,
Yeah,
he
I mean,
is. Go on.
I'm always slightly puzzled about his best position, whether he's a number 10 or if he's a winger, or what exactly is he? Could he be a number 9? I'm not sure. You know, there actually is a position that actually adequately describes what he does. But I think, you know, in the future, when he sort of settled down a bit, isn't trying to do everything all the time, he'll probably be a great number 10 because, as you say, can pick a pass out, can hit the ball from distance. We're just perhaps learning not to try to hit the ball from distance might be a good thing.
Well, I think in what you're saying there is that, you know, you haven't worked out whether he's better out wide in the middle, roaming around, wherever it is. I think that actually it's there's enough variety there that he actually could just pick and choose the style he plays against a given opposition. Now, for instance, against Newcastle, they struggled to pick him up, and he had a lot of fun until such times he went off. But you know, he had a lot of fun. Whereas the next team might play something more of, as they used to say, a low block, or in reality, parking the bus. And he'll play a different game. He might be actually a bit more in the mix. I mean, you have to remember I think we have to remember he's what, 2021. He's been in this country for not that very long. He's already made a name for himself, albeit via screamers. But I think that as much as the TV people say, well, remember the great goal against Chelsea, remember the great goal against Man City, he actually does offer a lot more than that. And his decision making is getting better in a way that, and it's my turn to pick on him now. Facundo's is still actually being a little bit sluggish. So I think that Enciso is actually quite a bright talent. And as much as that there are people who say, you know, how good he is, I think he's actually even better than how good he is, because he is someone that is a menace to the opposition.
Tom?
I think if you look at some of the best tens that there's been in the league recently, one thing that they all have in common is that they're quite happy to drop deep and get the ball and start a move off. You know, how many times did you see someone like Eden Hazard in his own half starting something, winning the ball, going forward? And I think that was what stood out to me at the weekend at Newcastle, was he was that player driving it. He would just pop up everywhere just to get his foot on the ball. He was giving options to Dunk and Webster as a pass out from the back. And I think that's so encouraging to see as a player at his stage of development. And he just makes everything look very easy. He's when he's confident and got his tail up, and he looked like he had the beating of every player on Saturday. And it's a joy to watch when a player's like that pompous.
Well, the additional to that is if you rewind about, what was it, a year or so when he played against Chelsea and scored that worldie, and then you notice that RDZ had a bit of a downer on him. He said, you know, because it was 20 minutes to go, and he said after that he stopped playing, and that really
Oh, he hooked him,
annoyed
didn't he?
him. Sorry?
He hooked him.
He did hook him, and he took him off and said, you know, because he wasn't putting the effort in. Now, admittedly, he's done the same. He took him off with however long it was to go this time around. But the for me, the point is that he does actually keep going. I mean, I don't think he's actually started and finished the same game just yet, but he does keep going. He doesn't, you know, it's not a case of, right, I've scored my worldie, that's my job done. He does keep going. You can see the work in progress that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, there was that game against Wolves when we put six past them, like last season, was it? Last season,
It was last
and
season,
like,
yeah.
and oh no, Onciso was just instrumental in pretty much all of the goals. It was just absolutely incredible. I mean, and it goes back to the point you were making earlier: is he a wide player? Is he a 10? It's you know, it's a conundrum, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the answer is. But
Can
speaking
I,
about
sorry,
that.
sorry, AD, can I just say I'm going to create a new name for his position? Pest.
No, there we go. But I mean, speaking about conundrums and trying to find a solution, Tom, we
Yeah.
scored a goal from a corner.
By mistake.
I mean, is it a coincidence that it's about a week after the fans forum when someone asked, should we be scoring more from corners? Has that brought it to the front of De Zerbi's mind? No. To be honest, I had no idea how it went in. From up in the sky in St. James's Park, it just looked a little bit like, oh God, it's gone in. But watching the replays back, I think it's actually really good positioning and fighting from Veltman to get in front of the ball. And I think we've been slightly unfortunate with corners this year. But the delivery was decent. I think, yeah. Hopefully score a few more. But to be honest, at the moment, I don't care where the goals come from. I just want some goals.
Actually, Nick, I mean, we saw in the last few games prior to this that Valentin Barco's got his delivery from corners has been absolutely in incendiary, and they hopefully there'll be some joy to come from that next season.
Yes, the Villa game, wasn't it? That Billy Gilmour was taking some corners, and not Pascal Gross. And I think a lot of people quite near where I was sitting were saying, "No, don't let Gross take it. Don't let Gross take it." I mean, he has been the man from set plays, but I think there might have come a time to let's get some variety into it. Billy Gilmour takes a decent corner, and as you say, Barco's, those driven corners, they're a real option. Yeah, in
Absolutely.
the old, I can remember the old days when we were pretty good from corners. Even the Barry Lloyd team, with the corner to Colin Pates coming in late, one for the kids there. It's really slightly baffling that De Zerbi is an innovator in so many ways, but when it comes to set plays, not so much. You'd think this guy would have, dozens of unusual set plays up his sleeve, but I think he thinks that, the pure stuff is from free play.
But it's corners kind of a dying art now, because it doesn't feel like there's a huge number of goals from a lot of teams from corners. So
No,
that's just
they.
part of
Well,
running.
it's odd, isn't it, that Arsenal, who were never any good from corners, either attacking or defending, seem to have led the way, with what they're doing. But then they've got a set plays coach, as have Villa, in fact. Not that that did them much good.
No,
No, it's.
absolutely.
Well, I think it's also just generally teams have worked out. I mean,
Of course, we did score against Palace from a corner.
After 2 minutes, and that was hilarious, for everyone except that lot. No, it's the nature of defending at corners, whether it's either zonal or man to man, has become an art form in its own right. And so, yeah, there's only so many ways. And given that, what you're going to do, you're going to plant the ball into a given area. There's only so many varieties you can have of that. And this is where then the quote short corner comes in. Or you just play it back to Verbruggen, who's standing on the halfway line, who's then going to launch it back into the box. I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, Tommy, you're shaking your head there.
Just short corners. I'm not sh well. We might have scored one from a short corner, but I struggle to think of them.
There was a study about, it was quite a long time ago, about 20 years ago, that they looked at a number of short corners taken. I think it was in the Championship or the equivalent. And statistically, the most common set play following a short corner is a throw into the defending side. And they just don't produce many goals. In fact, and they're so easy to mess up that that's what usually happens.
Okay. Well, coming into this game, that I mean, Newcastle, they did create a lot of chances. Obviously, they did have the ball in the net again, which is quite clearly offside. But when both teams were trying to find a winner in this game, it just did. I think we all know the answer to it, and I think it's going to be we're not going to see him again. But when you've got someone like Ansu Fati on the pitch, on the bench. And the way that we'd rediscovered our passing patterns, it just would have made a lot more sense to see him on the pitch to see if he can get a winner, rather than bringing on Baker Botty or
I'm assuming we don't want to pay any more appearance bonuses.
Yeah, I think that, it was an experiment that, well, I wouldn't say it hasn't worked. I mean, what it's actually meant is that, okay, we don't want Ansu Fati, because he hasn't progressed really through the season. I think he probably peaked playing in Amsterdam, but
Then he got
that's
that injury. Then he got that injury at Forest, didn't he? So.
Yeah, but the point is he didn't really progress his decision making. This is the bizarre thing, and is it again a contextualized thing that yes, this was the next big thing at Barcelona, and he can't cut the mustard at Brighton because he can't actually get his head around De Zerbi's methods. Is that, you know, are we looking at some kind of parallel here? I mean, to actually compare Brighton and Barcelona, but you know, when you've got a Barcelona sort of rising star that can't cut it, you know, a mid-table Premier League side, or hasn't cut it in the way that he looked to promise to do, it's, I don't know, is it him? Is it us? Is it, you know, has he lost his mojo?
I remember talking to Oscar Garcia about, oh God, who was that player who went to Everton and Watford, who'd been at Barcelona? A winger.
The one we tried to sign. I know the guy you mean. De La Feu?
That De La Feu, yes. And Oscar Garcia had said that, you know, he was a bit of a difficult player because he wouldn't track back. And it took looking at... He asked him who his favourite player was, and he said Lionel Messi. So Oscar just basically showed him a load of videos of Lionel Messi tracking back and doing the donkey work. And, you know, perhaps it just needs him to be shown, look, this is what, you know, what's expected of you in a De Zerbi team, you know, showing videos from last season of Solly March and Mitoma doing what he wanted him to do. But, you know, just sometimes players just don't get it. Just doesn't go in.
Mm. Well, I think
maybe he didn't want to play that way.
Well, I do think that he was actually starting to show signs of actually becoming the player we thought we'd signed when he got injured. And it's like, oh, that's just the tale of most of our squad this season. It's like, you know, you're just as they're about to get really, really good, they we lose them for 6 months.
Yes, looking at you, Van Hecker, and what have you. Yeah, it's horrific, the injury list. And it's not even just the number of players, it's the length of time that they've been out. I mean, someone did actually do a list of it, and you think, wow, that is a shocker. I mean, I'm just hoping we're going to see Solly March again ever.
Yeah, that's pretty tough to come back twice from an ACL, and now the fact that they don't think he'll be back in time for pre-season because he's not even running yet. I mean, I feel terrible for Solly because he was phenomenal last season and into the start of this season, and to then have to miss out on the European football and all of that must be absolutely gutting after being here for so long. And undoubtedly we've missed him. I mean, we've missed the ability to have two very good wingers on the pitch at the same time. And that I think that's killed us and killed our momentum going forward, at least for most of the season.
It's interesting you talk about momentum, and I know this is what you touched on, all four of us, about sort of 10 minutes ago, is, you know, after the Bournemouth game, you know, everyone was down, you know, can't we just have the season finishing now? That'll do us, you know, that enough's enough, you know, can we head to the beach now? And of course, you know, the season wasn't over. There was still four or five games to go. And, you know, because we still have two, I mean, most clubs have one, we've got two games to go.
Yeah.
There is still, you know, the incentive, there's still the goal to go for, and you know, the season before last, you know, in other words, that game against West Ham is a cautionary tale that, you know, if there's an extra couple of million you want your club to have, then don't stop playing. Because if you remember, we were 1-0 down against West Ham and sort of therefore residing in 13th place, and then we decided to kick on, score three goals and end up finishing in ninth and end up getting an extra £8 million in bonuses for it.
Yeah. So, right. So, yeah, I've got that list. So, this season, so Estupiñán has missed 21 games. March has missed 39. Mitoma, 22. Onciso, 32. Fatty, 14. Lamptey, 20. Pedro, 10. Ferguson, 12. Modder, 16. Hinchelwood, 18. Milner, 24. Veltman, 8. Webster, 12. Welbeck, 11. And Gilmore, 5.
It's not clever, is it?
I mean, the biggest shock of that as well is the fact that Welbeck has probably had one of his least injury hit season in amongst all of our injury crisis, you know, and he's looking great, and I'm glad that he's signed on for another couple of years.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about Danny Welbeck later, but first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com. com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, an online gallery of over 130,000 shirts for your delight and delectation. Phil has given us another shirt to have a look at for this week. Who wants to have a go at describing this one?
I think I know it, so I'll let Tom go first.
Okay.
So my response to you, AD, was horrible.
Horrible colours.
when you sent it across to me. So it looks like a Palace away shirt, but it clearly isn't. It's white base with red diagonal stripe either side of the shirt and blue kind of almost chevrons down the shirt sleeves. Dayu is the main sponsor. And then the club badge is almost like a red Viking ship almost, or a red ship with a lion on the ship sail in blue. It's made by, is it Eremia? So good quality shirt.
Right, Nick, who do you...
The badge is the giveaway. It's to do with the maritime traditions of the Hanseatic League, and it's Hansa Rostock. I think, if I'm right.
You are right. Yeah, that is...
No, this is because I've seen them play somebody else, and I just remember noticing the badge, and it's... and just think... I read a book about the Hanseatic League and at one point, so that just stuck in my mind. I've absolutely no chance of getting it any other reason. I didn't know that those were their colours, and didn't recognise. I knew who the sponsor were. I didn't know who was sponsored by them, but I just recognised the badge.
You want to put a year on it?
I've got to be honest with you. That is a 25 yarder, Nick. I mean, well done.
Oh, the year that was. I think other sort of designs of that type were sort of early 90s, late 80s?
A bit later than that. A bit later. Right. I'll put you on a bit. Well, you know, there is no misery. You know what it is. This is what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. He says, here is your shirt of the week. And it's a typically understated 96 to 97 shirt design. And it's the 96-97 home shirt of Zwei Bundesliga side Hansa Rostock. Well done, Nick. Home is the 29,000 capacity Otzi Stadion in the northeastern German city of Rostock. Their badge depicts their nickname, Ischkolga, a type of seagoing vessel which originated from the Baltic region from around the 9th century. The side was formed in around 1954. And climbed to the Bundesliga in 1992 when the league was expanded to accommodate two East German sides. They bounced around the leagues but did spend 10 consecutive seasons in the top flight between 1995 and 2005. And they remain one of the most successful and best supported sides from the former East Germany and were the very, very last winners of the DDR Oberliga in 1991. Links to the UK include Marcus Ulbach, who was at Aston Villa between 2002 and 2004, and he spent a season at Hansa in 2004-05. Yari Littleman spent one season with Liverpool in 2001. He turned out for Rostock 13 times in 2005. And the most notable former player is probably Joachim Streich. He played more than 150 times for Rostock, and he holds the record for most appearances, 98, and goals, 53, for East Germany, GDR, between 1969 and 1984. Absolutely no Albion links, but he'll try harder next week. So thanks for that, Phil. And look, like I said, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Now then, Alan.
Hello.
We have... Well, you myself and Nick were fortunate enough to be in the stadiums during lockdown, and one of the key things that we noticed
about our foghorn?
It was a particular foghorn, and I learned some new language. I learned some new words, and who was responsible for those words?
Must be Adam Lallana.
It was Adam Lallana. He was he's announced time on his Albion career after 103 appearances, 94 in the Prem, and 3 goals. Now, Tom, I mean, I think we're all a little bit sad. I mean, I don't think we saw as much of him as we would have liked. But when he's on the pitch, and you just notice just what a Rolls-Royce of a footballer is, and he just made everybody else a bit better.
Yeah, I mean, he was a well, he is a quality player still. I think his first touch is probably amongst the best in our squad. His ability to turn out of any gap, incredible. But I think probably what he'll be credited with is more helping that change of mentality in the squad and the stuff that he did off the pitch. I think Paul Barber said a few weeks ago that he was the one that really challenged that thought in the club of if we're playing a top six team, no, we should be going in and thinking we should beat them, not let's try and keep this down, lads. And I think he's really helped drive the standards through the squad. And I think, you know, you can put some credit as to where we are now, down to that signing.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Adi and Alan were referring to was that I think it was particularly a game at Selhurst Park when the Albion came back from 1-0 down to get a draw, and
Alistair.
Lallana was just urging all the other players on, and not just come on lads, but actually constructive stuff. You know, where to pass the ball, very positive. You know, urging the team to keep attacking and not let their intensity drop. And it was very, very instructive to see that, or hear that, I should say, you know, in an empty stadium. And you imagine we just it just tells you what's going on, you know, when the crowd is there and what his effect on his teammates.
And a lot of that time, those times, Nick, he wasn't even on the pitch. He was on the
Oh,
bench or on the
exactly.
sidelines.
No, I know that, and that's the thing, of course, if he had been on the pitch more often, you know, we would. I would like to see more goals from him, but you think about that goal he scored away to Wolves, you know, one touch to control and the next to stick it in the top corner. Fantastic, a little bit of footwork and a cross to Mitoma, also at Molineux. Little flashes and an instant pass for Mopé to hit the ball straight at the goalkeeper quite early on. Yeah, just the glimpses that we got. But, you know, equally, you know, they put him on. You know, for last first half or the last 20 minutes, and you know he'd go into a very forward, very positive position. Almost always was looking to do something positive with the ball.
Tom, I was actually quite surprised actually that he didn't actually start the game away in Rome. I mean, he was fit enough, he's on the bench,
Oh, they came in Rome.
but it was one of those where, I mean, obviously we you know, it was ifs and ands and
It's
pots and
always easy
pans
to
and
be
stuff,
wise after the event, isn't
but
it?
you know,
I've
the
got
lack of Milner or Lallana starting that game, I think it makes a massive difference when you're going into that bear pit.
what game are you talking about? I can only remember a 1-0 win against Rome. I don't
No,
remember
mate.
any other game.
Yeah. Yes, Tom.
I was
Yes.
talking to a very well-respected fellow journalist and Albion follower who was he said the team selection for that was one of the most arrogant he'd ever seen. That the it was a sort of we're Brighton and we're going to play our way, you know, a team selection in a situation where that just wasn't appropriate. First leg, you know, away leg of a two-legged European tie. Everything you do is just to not give the team any early encouragement, kill off the crowd, and we did the exact opposite. I mean, this was a time to stick an extra midfield player in there, either a Lallana or Milner or Baleba. But no, we went our way and we got punished for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that
Yeah.
whole sort of it's that kind of mindset that makes you realize that De Zerbi is not necessarily ready for the very top strata. You know, he was getting all sort of flirtatious eyelids being batted at him, supposedly from bigger clubs. Although I think when you look back on it, you think how much of it was media talk, how much of it was paper talk. You know, sort of
What are you saying
parliamentary.
about the media and the papers that people make stuff up just to get column inches and get clicks?
Yeah,
Liverpool, I understand,
in
was
many
never ever an
languages as
option, by the
well.
way. I've been told on fairly good authority that Liverpool was never an option.
Exactly. So the point would ever be is that, you know, the for all the hype and all the nonsense that got swirled around it, I think it's fairly obvious. Well, on two levels. One, as you say, that team selection is something that, you know, he's got experience of managing in Europe, but you know, with a team that's burgeoning and it's way up, that's still finding its own feet, you can't help thinking that actually Roberto himself is in that same position. He's still finding his own feet. And as much as he's talked about, he wants to achieve success at a quote smaller club. I mean, because you know, once you go to Bayern or to Man United or to Barcelona, or one of the bigger sort of European clubs, you're expected to do it, and therefore the achievement isn't quite so spectacular. To do so well at a smaller club is the kudos is off the scale, and yet here we have it that he's still learning his trade
There was
clearly.
probably a time in the season, you know, when we were playing with massive confidence, when you just might have gone there and got away with it. But the team that loses 3-0 at Fulham, 4-0 at Luton, you know, 3-0 at Bournemouth, it was never going to be able to go to without a severe amount of restructuring to go to Roma and avoid a hammering.
Absolutely. I mean,
Yeah.
that you've just raised the point there is that also, irrespective of the fact that we've had injuries, there's at times we've defended like absolute, you know, not even a sieve. It's, you know, it's a sieve that's had several holes, more holes blown in it. I mean, sometimes our defending was a little bit of a joke. So, you know full well that, you know, there's no way that any of those top clubs would allow that to happen under their, you know, in their own
Yeah.
colours. So he still has at least 2 or 3 years to learn.
Okay. Well, let's look, going back to Lallana then. And he's basically he spoke very, very glowingly about his time here at the Albion. He's had a great time. He's one of the best dressing rooms he's ever been in. He Lallana is of the opinion that we've had a really good season. De Zerbi thinks otherwise. Can they both be right and can they both be wrong? I think they both are.
Well, don't forget, Lallana came before De Zerbi, so he knows, you know, what it's like for a Brighton team to be sculling around at the bottom of the division or towards the bottom. De Zerbi finished sixth in his first season, and by those standards, it possibly was a bit of a disappointment. So Lallana's right in terms of his experience of the Albion, and don't forget, you know, we're still on course for the third best finish in the club's history. Possibly the second with a bit of luck. Could both be right?
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, you do have to look at the context. I mean, in the context of the history of the club, I mean, it's still another amazing season. I mean, who still expects us? So let's look. Let's ask the question from 3 years ago. Okay, you're going to finish ninth, sixth, and maybe 10th. You know, in that particular order, is it? Yeah, right. Whatever. Hang on. Are you saying we're going to sustain this? Yeah, right. Of course we are, mate. Oh, and play in Europe? Yeah, of course. Oh, and have, you know, our top players out for half the season each? Yeah, of course that's going to happen. In that context, when you look at it that way, I'm certainly Team Lallana here.
Yeah, I think overall it's been a good season. I think at the start of the season, I seem to remember coming on and we all kind of said if we can finish top half and have a good crack at the Europa League, then that would be a really, really good season. I think it's probably just the manner of the last couple of months of March and April in particular that have maybe tainted some views. As to us having a bad season, but then finishing with Villa, with Newcastle, and then hopefully good results against Chelsea and Man United, everyone will go into the summer feeling really positive, really good. And I think it's important to end the season on a high, just to reiterate that it was good. And from my perspective as a fan, I mean, you know, we've spoken about this at length, but
Yeah.
some of the memories that I've got from this season, I'm always going to be able to say that 23-24 season is one of the best I've ever had as a fan. Trips to all of the European games, some of the football that we played, you know, we'll always remember this season and last.
Yeah, when that
Absolutely.
group when we were drawn in that group, we probably all thought, wow, you know, three real glamour ties, happy with that. Didn't expect to get out of the group, perhaps, but certainly not to win it. And that by itself is an amazing achievement.
Oh, incredible.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been large. I mean, obviously, the European adventure has been absolutely wonderful, and I think, to a certain degree, I think, from a supporter's point of view, I think we dip all our eggs in one basket to a certain degree, and that is like, when are the fixtures out? Oh, they're out in June. Yes, but when are the European fixtures out? Because it's kind of like familiarity with a lot of most of the sides. It's in this league, there's no real exciting away fixtures anymore. But I mean, generally speaking, I mean, I do feel that we've left too many points on the pitch this season. I think the home games against Burnley and Sheffield United in particular were ones where we've absolutely been dominant. And how many times can we make a goalkeeper look amazing? It's we do it
Well,
on
thing
such a
is,
regular basis.
every single club is always going to say they felt they've left points out on the pitch. I mean, last season, I think that we probably maxed out on what you could have argued, oh, we could have got this, could have got that. I don't know. I mean, don't forget last season we finished sixth and got stuffed by Everton 5-1, didn't we? So was that season or am I thinking the
That
wrong
was last
season?
season, yeah.
No, we lost at Forest very badly. We got done at Newcastle and as we still finished sixth. You can't
Exactly.
expect to win every game.
No.
That's the thing.
No, so the point would be is that yes, we could argue we've left too many points on the pitch, and this is, don't forget, all we can do is rewind 3 years and have this same discussion that we had with Graham Potter. Brilliant performances and at the time performances that we hadn't seen with an Albion side, and then here we are now. Now we're still not expecting it because I think that we all still have that mindset here. That we're not that we're not part of the elite. We're not part of the top six. Yes, we played in Europe. Yes, we've done well, but we've finished the season with not exactly a whimper, but not with the sort of like the same crash bang wallop that we did last two seasons. So, let's consolidate. Let's see that. And I think we've all got to sort of as fans sort of temper some of our expectations. We didn't know at the beginning of the season what the European adventure would bring in terms of the league form. I mean, especially as we've seen other teams crash and burn in the league, whilst they play in Europe. So in that sense, I think we've done really well. But let's temper our expectations, I think. Meanwhile, I think it's just a case of leaving it to the club, leaving it to Roberto to get the players in that they need. And that includes obviously having someone who for me is probably a bit like Brian Houghton to Alan Mullery, replacing Adam Lallana, that someone that Roberto on the pitch can actually trust with actually then putting out all his instructions.
Tom.
I think as well as you were talking about, last season, got to remember as well what we took 6 points off Chelsea, we took 4 points off of Liverpool, we took points off Man City, points what another 3 or 4 points off Arsenal. We took a lot of points off the traditional big six last season, and you can't always bank those, so you've got to find ways to pick those points up from somewhere else. And I think that's probably our challenge as well, is it always feels like we underachieve against teams in the lower part of the division, and we still have that trouble of breaking down a low block. And I think that's where we really need to focus on getting better and picking up points, so that we're taking points of those teams around us and below us. And then when you do get the points off of your Arsenals, your Cities and stuff, that's what puts you into the top six rather than
So you've got to consolidate, basically.
And I think we've done that to a certain extent this year. But most of the hard work seemed to have been done in August and September.
It seems like it. Certainly seems like it. Okay, well, I was talking about adding some an experienced head to the squad to replace Adam Lallana. Two players are still going to be here. One of which I still keep forgetting plays for us in the shape of James Milner, because we haven't seen him for so long. And of course, Danny Welbeck, Danny Welbeck signed for 2 years, Milner for one. I'm delighted with that. I mean, Danny, I think next season he'll see his minutes diminish a little bit. I think we'll
You
see.
reckon?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot more of Evan Ferguson next season. I think he's going to be hopefully back fit and well.
And does that include Dennis Undav as well?
Well, I don't think Undav's coming back.
No, I don't think he is.
I mean, the basically, Stuttgart are basically now they've qualified for the Champions League. They basically it didn't look like they were going to be able to afford them, but now they've got the Champions League money. Now they can, and you know, he's had such a tremendous season for them. He's got amongst the best stats. I think 18 goals and 10 assists. I think it is for the first Stuttgart this season, which is true. And he's now got a German cap as well. The only thing is, when you look at those figures, ordinarily you would see your market value skyrocket. But I think we may possibly have agreed some sort of a fee with them in the loan deal.
Seems
Yes,
to
I think there
go on.
was a plan to bring him back, actually. What am I saying too much? I think that Deserve did want him back, and unfortunately, I think that's been scuppered by them, as you say, he's qualifying for the Champions League and being able to afford the agreed fee. We'll see. But I think there was a plan to bring him back and send someone else out on loan. So, one person's opportunity. So we'll see how that goes next season.
Yeah, I mean there is now a Lallana shaped hole in the squad. I mean there's this well there's you can just
Please
throw
don't
names at it,
speculate as
can't
to
you?
who we're going to get, because the one name that keeps coming up in all this is one
Ross
that actually
Barkley.
fills me with fear, is that Jordan Henderson's coming.
Yeah. No, thank you very much.
No, thank you very much.
I'd love to have Ross Barkley though, the one that played for Luton. That is.
I voted for him as Footballer of the Year, actually.
I think he's. I mean,
Wow.
it's a bit of a renaissance for him, and I think he would fit into De Zerbi's system. And one thing that we haven't really had this season is goals from midfield, and that is something that he would add.
Now, is it going to be the case that, because I think he's made mutterings of it. Now, sorry, getting back to your original point, yes, it's brilliant that Danny Welbeck is sticking around. And I think that James Milner, I suspect, is probably going to offer more off pitch than he is on pitch, just because, again, he's ancient now. Is Pascal Gross sticking around? Now, I say he's made overtures about the fact he wants to go home, but does that mean that the club is going to cash in on the last year of his contract, or is he just going to run out his contracts and stay with us for another year? Is there any sort of mutterings about that, Nick?
I sort of think he was going to see that last year out. He was talking after after picking up the two gongs at the player of the season. He was making much of, I've got one more season left, on the contract. And
Cool.
I suppose it depends what's on offer elsewhere. De Zerbi, as usual, talking up our players to other clubs by saying he could play in a top four team doesn't help. But I think I'm not sure anybody with his lack of pace, which we know isn't a problem, but other clubs might see as a problem. I don't
Yeah.
think he'd probably get that thing unless he went back. Unless he went back to Germany,
Yeah.
which he's kind of said he would
Well,
do at
this is
some
my
point, but I'm
point.
not sure this is the point.
It also depends on how good a summer he has as well, of
Very much
course.
so.
Yeah, I mean, go on, Tom.
I'd like him to stay at least another season and see out the contract. And he feels like the kind of player that actually that loyalty, you know, he's been here, what, next season will be his ninth season with us if he stays.
Well,
Eighth, I think.
he joined us as we got promoted, so
Yeah.
it'd be yeah, he's eighth.
Yeah, so that's a long time in kind of footballer terms, and shown an awful lot of loyalty, been through a lot with us, and I'd hope that he'd want to see the contract through. And you know, I think as a club, that loyalty goes both ways. I think if he makes a choice that he doesn't want to renew after that, I think you know we've got an awful lot of value out of that £3 million, right? Maybe the best value signing we've
Absolutely.
ever made.
And I think it's also churlish to think that you could cash in on him just for his last season.
No, I don't think that would happen. I think that if he wanted to go now, I think they'd pretty
Sure.
much let him go
Yeah.
for a nominal fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's given so much that, you know, the respectful thing to do, like Lallana, as De Zerbi said, as soon as he said it's about his family, he was like, that's completely understandable. You do what's right for you. If Gross says, I feel now's the time I want to return to Germany, I'm
Yeah.
sure the club would facilitate that.
How do you replace someone like Pascal Gross, though? I mean, he basically just gives so much. I mean, he's versatile, played all over the pitch, goals,
You
more
stick a
goals
pair of
and
of boots on a tortoise.
Well,
you
you
know
don't try,
an
you just look
Ecuador.
for something else. You look for what other different players can give you and try to fit them in.
There'll be
I
an
do think,
18-year-old in South America somewhere.
but this is the point: is that if obviously we're losing Lallana, if and I say I'd like to think he is going to stick around, we then lose someone else who's equally experienced. That's not just sort of. I mean, how many years worth of football experience are you actually losing in one hit? And you think, hang on, didn't we just lose a decent central midfield pairing last season? Are we going to take another hit with this? So I hope that I would suspect, and I hope that actually the club will almost blackmail if they have to Pascal Gross into staying on account of the fact that we basically bloody need him.
But then you look at the way that the club's been run historically over the last few years, and you look at the progression of players that we've had on the pitch. So obviously it took McAllister and Caicedo an acclimatization period. And you're gonna have this. You've had the same with Belhiba. He's been dipped in and out, and I think we're going to see a massive improvement in him next year. We're going to see the same with you've got Billy Gilmour, Buonanotte, who we're going to say nice things about now, Nick.
Oh no, I mean, I think there's a brilliant player in there. I'd like to see him play more as the number 10, which was his role with the Argentina under 20s, rather than be stuck out as a sort of not quite as good Solly March on the
But
right.
yeah, so but you know, so we're going to see progression from them as well. Another year further forward, another year further forward from Cesar. So the talent's there, and obviously we do need to
But
build
you
on it.
need the
And obviously,
experience, though. That's what worries me, is the
but see,
experience.
Paul Barber has said that we're going to keep with our methods, which means that we're not going to get that experienced 27 or 28-year-old, that would be the obvious fit, in a sort of driving forward. A Brian Houghton, we're not going to get that, certainly at the age that Brian Houghton joined the Albion, absolutely in his prime. We may add some experience of a 30-year-old, 31-year-old from somewhere else. And that is the club model, blends of youth experience, bit of a hole in the middle.
I mean, I personally think it's actually going to be quite a busy summer, if only because, well, I mean, we've already acquired the doctor, so hopefully, the physio room won't be quite so busy. And
So,
what was it you
Tom,
said?
didn't you say there's a transfer fee for a doctor?
Wasn't there like a 250,000 euro release clause or something that we paid?
He was Pascal Gross's club doctor, I believe, at Ingolstadt, I think.
Yes, he was,
And
yeah.
yes, and Gross spoke glowingly about him, actually. So there might be another reason for Pascal to stay, to work with a guy who's going to keep him fit.
I
I mean,
think also,
yeah.
it's Eintracht Frankfurt he's coming from, right? And I believe there was some stats showing that they had the least injuries in the top five European leagues as well. So clearly something going right there.
Yeah, it's. I mean, listen. Every club has suffered to lesser and greater extent throughout the season with injuries, and I'm just wondering if it is the nature of not necessarily players being weaker, but I think more demands are put on them when they
It's
talk about
the
this
games
high
lasting 100
press.
minutes. Games lasting 100 minutes, that's the thing.
And this whole notion of the high press where they're running around like lunatics for the whole time, as opposed to not even being able to take a breather or right, okay, lads, let's drop back 10 yards and then go for it in the last 20 minutes kind of thing. It's relentless for 90 minutes.
Yeah, Tom.
You do wonder though as well with us whether there's been a bit of something's not quite been right at the club, because we've effectively got rid of our entire medical department throughout the season, and got rid of physios, doctors, and all of that. So clearly the club felt that something wasn't quite right and that they needed to act. How many times this season have we seen a player come back and instantly injured again?
Sure.
It can't be that bad. They fixed Danny Welbeck largely. but that is all we've got time for this week. The penultimate week of this season's Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com on DAB. Course on our podcast. Thank you to Alan Wares, Nick Trepanic and Tom Hyland. I've been Andy Packer. This has been the Albion Raw in association with oldfootballshirts.com. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
hardest thing to tell.